Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn, both links available in the show notes. I'm very excited to introduce you to our guests today, Lorenzo Garbuzo, Senior Consultant, and Vijay Sharma, Director and Senior Consultant at JWC, a leading global management consulting firm specializing in the exhibition industry and related business areas. We speak with them today about the Global Industry Performance Review 2024, the world's leading annual report on the trade fair industry, published in January.
In terms of maturity, you can clearly see that European markets and also US markets, they are to a certain extent stagnant in terms of growth projections. And that's due to their size and the fact that they are close to their maximum in a way. We do expect some growth, but it's in the low digit rate. So to put it in numbers, we forecast something between 1 to 2.5% in compound annual growth rate in net rented space for Europe and North America, while other markets are expected to do much better. Again, we were referring to Saudi Arabia, so that might be a good example. We expect growth of close to 10%.
Originally from Italy, Lorenzo Garbuzo is a senior consultant at JWC. Lorenzo has successfully led and advised on more than 15 major strategy projects for organizers and venues. These include market entry strategies, internationalization strategies, venue master plans, commercial due diligence assignments, and market and competitor analysis. Lorenzo leads GWC's industry research and serves as the project manager for the firm's flagship publication, the Global Industry Performance Review, the world's leading annual report on the trade fair industry. He also oversees GWC's consulting activities in Italy. Lorenzo holds a bachelor's degree in computer engineering and a master's double degree in business and management through the QTEM, Quantitative Techniques for Economics and Management program.
The region is going at a phenomenal rate, and it's kind of complementary to what the market is doing in the sense that how they are diversifying from their hydrocarbons and then how they are tapping on trade fairs as an industry to stimulate their economy. So it's kind of a blueprint, because I think a lot of emerging economies want to do that. They want to improve their trade. They want to, move away from greenhouse gases, so forth and so on. So I think Saudi Arabia is setting up a blueprint what other nations can do, or at least they can do some pilots in their own countries to stimulate their economy.
Vijay Sharma, our second guest in this episode, is a director and senior consultant at JWC. A seasoned executive in the global trade fair and business events industry with over 14 years of experience, including leadership roles across Singapore and India, Vijay brings deep expertise in launching trade fairs, portfolio strategy, commercial and digital strategies, and mergers and acquisitions. His track record spans high-impact projects across India, Singapore, Hong Kong, Thailand, South Africa, and Malaysia, where he has successfully shaped market entry and growth strategies in complex, fast-evolving environments. Vijay is a recipient of the prestigious UFI Next Generation Leadership Grant and an active member of the UFI Working Committee. He holds a Master's in International Management from the University of Strathclyde, UK. Now, on to this important and insightful episode with Lorenzo and Vijay. Lorenzo, Vijay, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I know we have been talking about this for a long time, but I'm really very happy that we are here and we are able to talk about your very important report. I think that's the whole idea. And I appreciate both of you joining this conversation today.
Thanks a lot, Sabanjan. Thanks for having me. And it's a pleasure to join you in your amazing podcast today.
Likewise, Sabanjan. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Me too. Absolutely. Let's put the whole thing in perspective. This is a report you do annually. And the ground that this report covers, of course, has a much bigger span of time in terms of understanding the numbers, understanding the growth and so on. What were the big takeaways when you went into this and you came out on the other side? What were the biggest takeaways for this report?
Just delving into the main messages straight away. Huh? So it's quite a piece of work, I think, the one we produced.
Yes.
Each year, we have the ambition to top the previous edition. And so far, I think we managed to do so, humbly saying, let's say. This year, for example, I think one of the highlights is the new section that we launched on prices. So we did quite some extensive analysis on price levels and price structure across different regions in the world. And we had some interesting results in that regard. There are some regions that are charging more. And we know it, of course. We know that the Middle East, for example, has scarcity of venue capacity that leads to high rates. And that's also the case in US. That's a different dynamics there, but price points are higher. And it was quite interesting to observe the composition and the ranking across how European country fares in this regard, because there's been talks of overcapacity in certain markets. So that was a nice benchmarking exercise we did. And then, of course, we have our classics sections, such as the market forecast. Of course, now you might argue we need an update given the latest developments in the economic climate, and we're working on it.
Yes.
But once again, we look at the most promising regions where the highest growth potential. And that's something that our readers and our clients are especially interested. Decision makers want to know the expectations, let's say. Yes. And then we have our top 40. That's another very well received piece of work or a component of our report, where we look at the performances of the leading exhibition companies. And we try to provide some benchmarks for best performance and companies that are doing well, let's say.
Right. So Vijay, if I bring you in here, would you like to touch upon what were the highlights when you're looking at it from the Southeast Asian or Indian perspective?
So I think Lorenzo covered extensively what we did in the report. But just to add further, I think in this year, if I'm not wrong, we added a deep dive section on Saudi Arabia. It was very interesting for me to read that. Because if you go through the report and if your viewers are getting access to these reports, they would find that the region is going at a phenomenal rate. And it's kind of complementary to what the market is doing in the sense that how they are diversifying from their hydrocarbons and then how they are tapping on trade fairs as an industry to stimulate their economy. So it's kind of a blueprint, because I think a lot of emerging economies want to do that. They want to improve their trade. They want to move away from greenhouse gases, so forth and so on. So I think Saudi Arabia is setting up a blueprint what other nations can do, or at least they can do some pilots in their own countries to stimulate their economy.
Yeah, I mean, when I was looking through it, my impression was UAE is possibly doing even better because they possibly potentially got into the game earlier. But we'll come to that later. So let's go back. To start with, there obviously is a correlation between the GDP and where the exhibition industry is, right? And one of the key things that came out was there is definitely some kind of I will not say deceleration, but lack of acceleration in the prime markets like North America and the US. And this is obviously pre-current crisis, if you call it a crisis. So what were the core reason for that? Why is it that the growth in China, India, Middle East is much pronounced? Is it because they were to start with on a low base, or is it something else?
Of course, we are looking at a mix of factors play in effects here, right? Mm-hmm. So there we are at different stages when it comes to these markets. In terms of maturity, you can clearly see that European markets and also US markets, they are to a certain extent stagnant in terms of growth projections. And that's due to their size and the fact that they are close to their maximum in a way. We do expect some growth, but it's in the low digit rate. To put it in numbers, we forecast something between 1 to 2.5% in compound annual growth rate in net rented space for Europe and North America, while other markets are expected to do much better. Again, we were referring to Saudi Arabia, so that might be a good example. We expect growth of close to 10%. Again, it's dependent on the capacity and whether there will be some additional venue coming up in the region. So that will play a major role, because that's a constraint today, the lack of capacity. Obviously, if your exhibitions grow, but they have no place to go, that there's a cap, there is an external constraint that they cannot exceed. So what's the reason? It's the economy. If you look also in terms of GDP growth rates, these other markets are developing at a much faster growth rate. Of course, the baseline, it's much different. So the economy size is different, right? And of course, trade, it's also another major macroeconomic indicator we look at when factoring in the different elements to project the outlook for the future. And these days, today, it's a challenge. What will happen and to which extent tariffs will hinder trade volume across the world. Right. So, yeah.
So two related questions that I have, and then we can move on to the next. See, first thing is that, like you rightly said in the new section that you brought in, one is the millions of square meters that are available for exhibitions, right? So that's where the growth of venue size and so on comes up. It's also the business generated per square meter. And that's not very often spoken about. That's one of the things that I think you tried to do with your, it's not only the price per square meter, but what is the output of that per square meter, right? And that will become a big factor, because although, I mean, in the trade imbalance point of view, US perhaps has the worst trade imbalance, but if you think of the revenue or the size of the exhibition industry there, it still is significantly higher given the size. I mean, of course, it's lesser than Europe combined, but as a single nation, it's still like is way, way, way ahead in terms of the numbers, right? So how do you sort of explain, or how do you look at it? Not explain so much as to how do you actually analyze this?
It's a tricky question in general for us. It's something that, of course, once again, there are different dimensions at play. One thing of particular interest for us is we conduct a mix of bottom-up and top-down research in this sense. So we look at, for example, the performance of the exhibition companies. In there, you often have a breakdown of space sold at their home base, so at their domestic exhibitions, and at their international exhibitions, as well as the split between the domestic revenue and international revenue. So in there, we have an indication of the productivity level, I would call it, where you basically, it's a ratio where you simply compute the revenue generated domestically, and you divide it by the space sold. And in there you get an indication. But of course, there's a lot of hidden revenue streams that could be factored in there. Mm. Because in the domestic market, there might be some additional effects on top of it. So it could be service revenues, Congress sponsorships, and so on, that might be reduced, that might be not really present overseas in international exhibitions. So that gives us a feeling of the business generated and at the different geographies. And of course, then we have our own market research that we conduct, where we try to estimate the revenue size per market and the space sold, which in general is higher, obviously, than the exhibitor rental rates, because you're not just looking at the revenue brought in by raw space. We're talking about all the additional revenue streams, let's say.
Right.
I don't know if I really addressed your question.
You did. I just want to add one dimension and see what you have to say. And Vijay, by the way, feel free to jump in any point that you think you want to add. So my question was the end. So one is the what the exhibition industry is generating. That's one component, right? Like, what am I as an organizer able to charge my exhibitor? And then what are the associated services that are, I mean, somebody's building the booth, somebody's, you know, hiring in audiovisual equipment and so on and so forth, additional services, like you said, and then the sponsorships around that. So that's at the exhibition. I was trying to think more in terms of what business are we helping our exhibitors generate? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so that's where I was wanting to, that's where I was headed with my question alongside what you just said.
Then I have to be honest, this is maybe the most crucial aspect of our industry, right? We have a metaphor for this. We are like a iceberg in a way, right? The tip of the iceberg, or let's say what you see, is just a fraction of the real impact that we generate as an industry. We were having interesting considerations on this. If you look at it, our industry from a revenue, like the direct revenue generated, is low. So we're talking about a 40, 50 billion USD industry compared to the car industry or the pharma industry, whatever. It's really like one company in this industry tops the total of ours, right?
Right.
But when you start thinking from a different perspective and you consider the indirect impacts, indirect effects generated, then the picture is completely different. And that's, of course, we are accelerators. We provide platforms for other business to thrive and to shine and grow. That's not part of our scope in our report, but there's some intelligence, some other reports that are working on it right now as we speak. So we might know more.
Sure.
In the near future.
Right.
But we already know, of course. We already have some...
Right. Associated question was, and this is not a direct question on the report, but the fact that we are both referring to whatever is happening around tariff, is it likely to impact US more this year in the sense that people who would have gone to access the US market, thereby exhibiting there, there could be a drastic cut down there and thereby the regional, non-US exhibition will grow much faster. What is your sense? I mean, I know that you're working on it. You may not have numbers yet, but what is your sense where this is going? Because we're already 4 months in this year, right?
Good question. Yes, as you say, we're still looking at it. It's the feeling, or let's say our preliminary understanding is that, of course, there will be some impacts, the extent of which is not clear. But what we can say is that US is mainly a domestic market. So the amount of world leading exhibition that heavily rely on international participation is not as pronounced as in Europe, for example, or of course, China is a special case, but you may argue that that it's not as pronounced as well. So the top international events will suffer, but in general, the market will be solid. The numbers will not be as dramatic as one might fear. That would be our take for the moment. And of course,
that's a very, very good take. I think that makes so much sense, because a lot of times we tend to talk in generalizations, right? I mean, I think what you rightly said, US market, I mean, again, these numbers are all what I have gathered, may not be exact, may not be correct, but US itself has about 300,000 exhibitors who are exhibiting in those 3,500 B2B shows. Possibly a very large section of them are really domestic focused and they really don't care what's going on outside. And maybe some folks from outside may not go to CES or to some of the large trade shows, but that's in an overall scenario that may not have a huge impact.
That's our perception. Of course, some of these exhibitors might tend to travel a bit less, might maybe reconsider participating in European shows or in other geographies due to rising costs. But we're positive, or let's say we are optimistic. In the given situation, we try to see the bright side. We do think it's not as bad as it might look.
Sure. So let's get back to the global exhibition industry forecast. What are the highlights according to you? What are you seeing there?
So the highlights, I think we already touched in terms of what's the expectation for the market. Right. And maybe Vijay, you can expand a bit, because I think that it's particularly of interest to mention India in this regard, because it will be with Saudi Arabia, in our view, it will be these two will be the fastest growing market for the next 5 to 10 in the next decade, basically. So that was one main takeaway, and Vijay work on a chapter on India, of course, and we try to carve out what are the characteristics from the market in there, and India is definitely a highlight. It will be a success story. In our view.
Vijay, would you like to add some details to this?
Yes, from a global context, I just want to before I move into India, I just want to make a couple of points with regards to US and Europe. They are saturated markets. It's well-defined. And as per our research, it's well-established. But I still feel that these markets still matter a lot, because if you really look at all the mergers and acquisitions are already happening in these two markets, and mainly driven in United Kingdom and United States. Then a second point I wanted to make was, you wanted to understand the economic impact of these exhibitors. What do they have when they participate in an event? I think I've been, as Lorenzo said, we've been trying to find the answer to this question. But I think right now my understanding is it's good to look at a country rather than an exhibition to understand the economic impact an exhibition or an exhibitor would have. And the best country I can think of is Germany. Because if you see Germany, the trade fair industry is deeply intertwined with the economy. And that's why you have all the different messes in different parts of Germany. Because they implicitly understand that we need to build these venues. And this was thought, I think, a couple of decades back. It's not a new thinking. And they wanted to make sure that these messes or these exhibition grounds connect East and West. So if you really look at Germany, most of their events are international events. And that's a good barometer for the global economy as well, to understand, okay, how the trade is flowing. I'm not sure if we can say the same thing at this point in time, but at least until last year, that was the case, that Germany, if you really look at the exhibitions happening in Germany, it can give you a sense of understanding how open markets, how the trade is flowing, what is the industry looks like. And there are a bunch of reports from a bunch of associations, industry body, which comes out, and they give you an understanding, okay, this is what is happening, this is what is happening. So these are the two points I wanted to quickly make before I jump into India. As far as India goes, India is a fascinating market. I mean, there's a running joke that India time was supposed to come 20 years back, because a lot of companies are set up in India 20 years back, and they were told that India has this huge population and this is the time for India. But things did not pan out as they were supposed to be. But I think at this point in time, a lot of factors are changing that right now. And the most important factor is internet. To give you an example, a person in the remote village of India can access the same information a person in Tokyo or in the United States or in Germany or, I don't know, in United Kingdom can access. So the internet is leveling that field. So what do I mean by that is these people are also getting access and exposure to what is possible. And when it comes to trade and events, I can already see a difference in India. I mean, 5 years back, you can still get away with subpar events quality. But I think with every year, the quality of events is increasing. And you also have some huge events which happen in India. And if you really look at the venue, let's not compare ourselves to, say, China or America yet, because we have to make sure that we are an emerging nation. Our GDP is comparatively less, but with our GDP, we are doing a fair job. We have some really world-class venues, especially in New Delhi and Mumbai. And I would also say the venue in Hyderabad is good. I can clearly see that where countries were going incrementally progressing in this journey, India can leapfrog.
I think it's interesting, right? If you look at the numbers in this sense, again, might be an unfair comparison, but what we observe when looking at India and China, it's that the space sold is about 10 times more in China, right?
Yes.
To put things into perspective. While the population of these countries, we're looking at 1.4 billion people in India and similarly in China, right? So that tells you something. Tells you about the potential. Of course, their venue capacity is different and so on. But the fundamentals, looking at population, GDP, not so much. Of course, China is a different beast. But the people, looking at the population, there is room for growth, for sure.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break...
If you really look at the number of venues in China, there are more than 300 venues we're talking about in China. According to our research, according to our data, India is close to 25, 26 venues, give and take. So if you really look at the scale, and I mean, if you look at just the population, and even if you look at the GDP, I think we have a long way to go. And I'm sure in the next couple of years, I foresee government driving this forward because most of the venues around the world are driven by governments.
You are listening to a Bizcast audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode.
This is a good information as well. We have around the same population. Yes, our GDP is comparatively less to China. But if you really look at the number of venues in China, there are more than 300 venues we're talking about in China. According to our research, according to our data, India has close to 25, 26 venues, give and take. So if you really look at the scale, and I mean, if you really look at just the population, and even if you look at the GDP, I think we have a long way to go. And I'm sure in the next couple of years, I foresee government driving this forward because most of the venues around the world are driven by governments. They are rarely private. It doesn't happen that it doesn't mean private people don't get into it, but mostly it's driven by government because of multiple factors. But I see in the next couple of years, some venues coming up in India. I think there are already a couple of them in the pipeline. And I think once you have that infrastructure, because infrastructure is not just roads, railways, airports, hotels, they're also venues. And I think the understanding is slowly dawning in the India market. People have started appreciating these events. And I think in the next couple of years, you would see some progress on that.
If you don't have the infrastructure in place, you cannot make things happen in this sense. So it takes a while for governments. So certain governments depends on their agendas and their visions and so on. So we have, as in JWC, we also try to advocate for the industry. So parts of our work is also to liaise with governments and stress the importance of the role our industry plays. But sometimes it's not easy to convey, or let's say it's not top priority in their agendas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would like to come back to the top 40 company, but before that, since we are here in the regional discussion, let's do a deep dive in China. Yes, I don't think we are comparing China with India or India with GCC. I think these are absolutely different setups, different geopolitical regions. So it has its own uniqueness, so to say. But when you are looking at China, what are the key points that you are seeing there?
I just wanted to quickly point out that China was back to its numbers, pre-pandemic numbers by 2023, as per our research. That was quite clear. But I think 2024 was a bit harder for them in terms of economy because their real estate market kind of went down. And when the real estate market went down, it also changes or it also disrupts your supply chain. And when your supply chain gets disrupted, it also lowers your consumer confidence. And from what we understand, government was already trying to do everything it can to support the economy. And they are very clear that they just don't want to be reliant on exports. They also want to make sure that their local economy can also sustain them in the long run. And that was the case until last year. But then I think things have radically changed after January. And now it's very difficult because when you have tariffs as high as more than 200% on a country's export to a market, I wouldn't say that the market US is completely the biggest market for China. But I think the whole game now shifts and there is a reset happening. So it's pretty difficult to say how China would do in this year, because from what we understand, China's biggest trading partners are ASEAN, and the president is already touring as we speak to ASEAN nations to make sure that they have those partnerships in place, and they make sure that they are trying to make sure that they are reliable partners. And it's good to see China coming out and saying that we believe in open and international trade. So in terms of the trade fair market, China is a humongous market. And if you see their shows, they are quite big. So if you think that America is self-sustainable when it comes to trade fairs and there is limited damage, when it comes to tariffs. I think China has their own, I mean, if I'm not wrong, Lorenzo, it's the world's second biggest exhibition market. And they have their own set of exhibitors. They have their own set of infrastructure in place. They already have all the know-how and they have the venues. So I think they can manage it. They might not experience the high growth rate what we were expecting, but I think it would still grow phenomenally well compared to other advanced economies.
Right, right. So you will see influx of companies may not be so much from US this year. Again, these are all conjectures. Things may change tomorrow morning. Things may go away. Everything can be, I mean, really, nobody knows, right? But having said that, there is a possibility that companies from other regions will like to tap into this domestic market. Like people want to tap into India, people would like to tap into the Chinese market as well, which has been the case for many things in the past, right?
That's the thing, right? China is not news in terms of, it has been in the eyes of organizers for 20 years. So the major players have already tapped in the market. It's I think all the messes in Germany basically have a subsidiary or activities or shows in China already. And also the major players, the peer organizer, X, Formas, these companies have significant businesses in place already. But it's true that there's still room for growth. If we look at what we our projections, still that it will be amongst the fastest growing market. Not as much as it used to do, because the growth between 2010 and 2019 has been impressive, and even let's say 2000 to 2019. One thing of interest might be the fact that China, in terms of trade, I think I was reading a study the other day, and it's quite diversified. So there's an indicator, geopolitical distance of their trade. Mm-hmm. They do trade activities with basically, they have the highest geopolitical trade distance compared to other markets. And that tells you that they're well diversified. So they're not dependent on just one partner.
Mm.
So their dependency, and this is something US have been trying to do in the last years as well, to shift away from this dependency and do more with South America and so on.
I'm not a geopolitical expert, but I like to read trade fairs. So from what we understand, Europe was moving away, because moving away in the sense they wanted to decouple from China until, I think that was the talk until last year. But with the new tariffs, the new geopolitical situation, that might not be the case. There might be a space where China can find Europe as a market. Because from what I read very recently, that the car or the automotive expo in Europe, I'm not sure if they have already cut the tariffs for the Chinese auto sector, but they are already talking about it.
Yeah, and Chinese auto was, I mean, especially if you look at the EVs, I mean, that's where China China's strategy was to leapfrog the ICE and move to EV and go heavily all in. I was listening to a chat by in New York Times or Ezra Klein's and all that. And they're talking of how they sort of leapfrog the ICE bit. And I know there are a lot more Chinese EVs in the European streets than the US. I mean, it's very evident, very visible.
It is the case. So that's, let's see. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So quickly, what do you see when you're looking at the top 40 companies? They obviously sort of command a very big part of the market. Pretty much they can move it this way or that. What are the key findings there?
Well, it's a very important section for us, right? Maybe before delving into the main takeaways, one comment on the approach we follow to produce this section. So for us, we rely on publicly available information, of course. So we look at their annual reports and we try to aggregate and combine information from a variety of sources as well as press releases. So it's a very challenging exercise, but we believe we have a high accuracy. And the findings provide a very interesting benchmark for the companies, benchmarks for companies. So I think in terms of findings, it's interesting to note how fragmented our industry is. So compared to other industry where you have these major companies that command half the market size, top 10 companies for us are more or less representing more than 20% of the market, of the total of the global market. So that tells you how fragmented we are as an industry, because you, of course, you have all these convention bureaus at the city level that are independent from each other. Of course, you have the large conglomerates. You have the Informas, GL, and RX. These are the three largest exhibition companies in our industry, exceeding $1 billion revenue. In the case of Informa, above $2 billion, to give you a sense of their size. But their business models are significantly different compared to other companies. So we look at it from different categories, right? So we consider their business models. We distinguish between pure organizers. So the events that do not manage a venue or do not own a venue, they only focus on organizing events. Then we look at the integrated players, for example, the German messes, where you have both the venue management activities alongside the organizing activities. And then you also have pure venue manager or pure venue owners. So those companies that solely focuses on their renting, leasing their venue space to third party organizers. So what's of interest maybe is the fact that all these categories have unique and different performances, right? So the profitability in the case of pure players, pure organizing players, is higher. That's not so, for me, it's not surprising, because of course their interest is different. Like, these are listed companies, they're listed in the stock markets, they're driven, their interest is to reward shareholders, right? So they have to generate profits. While in the case of government-owned companies, those are especially venues are owned by government, the interest is to generate indirect impacts, to have a sort of, so it's not as much profit driven. So the profiling of these categories, it's of particular interest in our report. And then maybe one interesting piece of analysis we did, we look at the KPIs development. So by KPIs development, we look at the financial KPIs as well as the operational KPIs to try to track historical trends and so on. So what we notice is that financially speaking, or let's say revenue-wise, companies in 2023 were already above 2019's level. We are companies in terms of revenues are fully recovered. But of course, this is inflation driven as well. So that's also factored in. While you look at the organic performance, and in this sense, we look at the net rented space, that's not so much the case. So we're close to 2019's level, but we're not exceeding it. We're still a bit below. Yeah.
So quick question. Did you see any, you mentioned inflation, so that sort of triggered this thought, that do you see any actual escalation in cost per square meter in terms of venues, which is keeping pace, or is it sort of still stuck in the 2019 level?
Yes, we observed that as well. Of course, with energy prices rising, and now once again, it will be a question with the tariffs, the expectation is that inflation in US will rise as well. So the ripple effect is to be, to a certain degree, might be something expected also, because these companies are also do have activities in US.
Right.
So their
right.
cost structure will be impacted.
Yeah, and so that sort of, as you said, it's down the chain. So exhibitors will have to spend more, which means it'll impact their cost, because a big chunk of exhibitors allocate about 50-70% of their marketing budgets to trade shows.
Yeah.
It's a big number. So which means there's a direct fallout on the cost of goods and services they're going to sell. So that sort of will continue to. Finally, let's talk about some kind of future gazing. What are the key trends if we have not covered? I know we went into a lot of depth in a lot of these areas, but do you see any overriding changes, notwithstanding this whole
tariff business. I mean, we have to keep it out, unfortunately, because it might have impacted some of the thoughts you had. So would you like to touch upon some, Vijay, Lorenzo?
Yeah, sure. I think it's also these years, we didn't have a dedicated, let's say, extended section on industry trends, but that's for sure a topic we always look at. So for us, it's interesting to notice certain aspects that we consider that we see are shaping the tendency for the future, the outlook. So there are somehow we call them some opposing forces of transformation. So on the one side, you have the unique selling proposition of trade fairs. For a long time, we've been saying it's serendipity. So the opportunity to meet people on trade fair on the show floor without too much of formalizing the meetings in a way. So to let them happen, let things flow. But on the other hand, there's the opposing tendency these days to curate the experiences. So the matchmaking and so forth. So in a sense, these two elements will remain, of course, they are part of our value proposition as an industry. But the tendency these days is maybe to curate experiences a little bit more compared to the past. So that's the expectation also for the future. And then, of course, more importantly than ever, or let's say what the expectation is for trade fairs to keep going towards regionalization instead of having these world-leading events that are the go-to place for the globe. We'll expect to have these flagship shows at a regional level to be there for the future. And then our business model, we've been discussing so much about the disruptions, or let's say the COVID. Will it end our industry? Will we ever recover? So the answer was clearly yes. So moving forward, we see continuity as well. We don't expect the disruption, even in the face of the tariffs and so on. We have a solid proposition to offer. So we consider content to be key. So in terms of what the organizers and show have to focus on, it's of course to put at the center place the content and the products and really offer something valuable for the customers, visitors, and exhibitors.
Yeah. Right.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit tradeshowengage.com. That is tradeshowengage.com.
2 points that you made make sense. One is that I also am looking at and talking to a lot of people who are curating not only the attendees, but actually curating a complete event, both including buyers and the sellers. Right? So these are like small events happening in a resort with 100 people participating, of which maybe 20 vendors and 80 buyers. And these are like very, very intimate sessions and very, very intimate. And that's possibly coming because I think we are not talking enough about exhibitor ROI. We are talking about the trade industry business ROI, but we are not talking enough of exhibitor ROI. And because the business is getting disrupted, because AI is in the horizon, lots of businesses are getting disrupted from the way they're getting doing business and so on. I guess that in the future versions of this report, you will see, and like you mentioned now, you'll see a lot more focus coming on the exhibitor demanding to know. I mean, we all can debate, oh, my computer is there, I'll be there. All this discussion about early booking. I mean, there's a whole host of things that we can talk of, I mean, apart from the report. But the point is that exhibitor ROI as a central focus, I think we'll see a lot of traction going forward, simply because the disruption is, it's not only about the tariff thing. There's a too much disruption coming just around the corner. Did you see, just before we wrap this up, do you see any discussion, any talk about AI disrupting any part of this business?
I would like not to refer to disrupting, but in a way that there's the potential to harness the technology, right?
Of course.
To enhance the experiences and to enhance the customer journeys. So yeah. of course, it's a topic, but maybe not necessarily a threat.
Yeah, sure.
So yes, it's something that we must consider. It's an exciting moment in this sense.
Absolutely. Before I wrap up, is there anything else you guys want to talk about? I'm absolutely happy to do that.
I just wanted to quickly add on to what Lorenzo said, or perhaps you asked. And these two things are quite interconnected because you asked what are the future trends. But I think if you can read our report, if your viewers can read our report, we have worked on something where we have identified demand side and supply side. What are the future expectations? So I think that's a great work. But you brought up ROI for exhibitors, but I mean let's not forget visitors as well. Because visitors,
yes, of course,
are the most important. From my understanding, the people I speak to, they don't want to reinvent the wheel, but they are the best organizers have come to a common understanding that visitors are the most important people in the trade fair, at least for them. Because if they have the right kind of visitors, they'll be able to attract the exhibitors. That's one thing.
True.
So they are talking about not just ROI, they're also talking about ROT, which is return on time. And I was just having this discussion yesterday, and we were discussing this whole thing about ROI. And I just asked, okay, so what is ROI? Can you define ROI? And most of them in the group thought of it. And we kind of defined what is ROI. And then the conclusion was that digital tools, or the AI in this case, can be harnessed to make sure that we have a chance to come to an understanding, okay, this is what the ROI is, and this is how we can harness or we can, you know, leverage the technology to quantify that ROI. Because ROI in face-to-face events, from our understanding, it's difficult to quantify it because there are a lot of qualitative aspects involved in an exhibition. But we are hoping for the best that in future, we will have the right kind of digital tools where we will be able to justify not just ROI to the exhibitors, but also ROT, or return on time to visitors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. This is wonderful. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining and sharing your thoughts. I'm sure we will meet again and talk again whenever Lorenzo is ready with his next take on
what's a topic for us. It's a topic we're giving up towards the next one. So
right,
see you next year, I guess.
No, I don't make it that late. We should do sometime middle of this year. Okay.
Okay,
Lorenzo. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Vijay.
Thanks for your time. Thank you. Goodbye.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for Pitchlink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.